This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
I am Sarah Jane Case, and this is Enneagram and Coffee.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. Happy Tuesday. You know, I hope the week has treated you well. I hope you had a good weekend. It's been a minute since I really felt like we were having a conversation, and I think part of that is because I don't have social media anymore and it feels like we don't have that back and forth. I think another part, well, I should say I do have YouTube still. So if you are like, you have things you want to communicate, I do have a comment section over there and like we can talk back and forth, but it's just like a smaller audience. It's not necessarily an overlapping audience. Like a lot of the people who listen to the podcast aren't on YouTube. So that's one thing. The second thing is that like, because I'm doing two episodes a week, I am doing more Enneagram-focused episodes, and I love Enneagram. I love talking about the Enneagram, but I miss a little bit of the, like, let's talk about life stuff, like my life and life in general and the things that plague us as human beings. And so I think we're going to touch on that today. That's kind of why I wanted to have this conversation, because, I love talking about the Enneagram, but I miss that sense that like we're friends who are catching up. And that's something that came really easily when I was podcasting 5 days a week. And I don't want to lose that. I feel like it's something that I really value about the podcast. So we're gonna try this route. Now obviously I'm gonna still do Enneagram episodes, but we're gonna try and sprinkle in some more of these as well. So I hope that this is, you know, like we're on a similar page. I usually feel like we are, so I hope that continues. All right, so today we are talking about what it means to be good enough. You know, it's easy in today's world, right? It's kind of even hard to escape the feeling of not being good enough. We're bombarded with images of seemingly perfect lives everywhere we look on social media. And no matter how many times we remind ourselves that everything is not always what it seems online or that we shouldn't compare ourselves, we still may find ourselves measuring our worth next to what we see others accomplish. You know, I think our generation, my generation, was raised by a generation that had very clear metrics of success that seem to work out for a lot of them. Like, you know, go to school, graduate, get married, buy a house, retire. Things that are not as cut and dry for us anymore. And I think being raised under the pressure of these markers, it can make it feel like if we don't meet them at a certain time and in a certain way, that we are failing. And the pressure to always be growing and healing, and don't forget to make time for your marriage, your children, your physical health, your mental health, and squeeze some self-care in there too. This perfecting in every aspect of our lives only adds to the burden. It's like we're constantly chasing an impossible standard, and it's really exhausting. And these pressures can really take a toll on our sense of self-worth. And in my opinion, in order to grow through this, we need to acknowledge these societal pressures and start prioritizing self-acceptance and compassion sooner than later. You know, I think I am someone who has really fallen into the trap of constant perfecting over and over and over again, and in such a way that I haven't had to face in quite some time. Really moving into a 9-to-5 work environment put me face to face with my overachieving nature in ways that I haven't really had to think about. Like the inherent limitations of that schedule also put me in touch with the reality that many of us cannot have it all. Like this whole idea of perfect balance is impossible. That what we really can do is simply prioritize what is most important for us in this season. I think one of the things we fall into most is the perfectionism trap, right? I'm sure we all know that feeling at some point of being stuck in a never-ending cycle of fixing yourself or feeling like you were always falling short. And we talk about type one as the perfectionists, but all Enneagram types can carry that pressure. Constantly pushing yourself to be flawless, setting ridiculously high standards that you can never quite reach. And when you inevitably fall short, you beat yourself up about it. It's an exhausting cycle. Some folks in the perfectionism trap even avoid trying new things because they're scared of not measuring up. Like, what if I try and I fail? What if I try and I'm not immediately glorious at it? But even when you do succeed, it's still never enough because there's always something more you could have done. So this whole perfectionism thing can really mess with your head, you know? It can make you anxious, depressed, and just plain burn out. And we know logically how to respond. So why do we keep falling into the self-fixing trap? Honestly, in my opinion, it's the ones with a deep well of empathy who fear letting go, right? The ones who thoughtfully engage with the world that may struggle to release the pressure to constantly fix. Like if you let go, then you don't know what you could be capable of. Like everything will just ooze out from all sides. And I think every Enneagram type is going to have a different fixation on this, right? Mine is around having a perfectly satisfying life. In my book, The Enneagram Letters, I have an essay in the type one section about cleaning out the refrigerator, about how I have like this perfect system and everything goes well. And I worry a lot about food waste and I'm kind of fixated on doing the best I can in that area. But it's also about like, I want my fridge to feel really good when I open it. And I want to feel good about the way that I engage with the world. You know, every Enneagram type is going to be different, but it's not something that's solely, like perfectionism isn't only a one problem. But it might not be for the same reasons. Like for me, with food waste, it's not necessarily about like, am I being good? But it's like, I never want to be sad or not have my needs met. And then it can kind of turn into a pressure and goes from a joy to something that I can fail at. And it's the same thing for all of us. You know, type threes can get into perfectionism traps because of success and wanting to be successful. Fours can fall into this trap because they want to be significant. Fives because they want to be informed, and so on. We all have a reason to fall into the perfectionism trap. And I think we all agree that perfection isn't achievable, and yet we still feel this pressure to constantly fix, constantly be improving, because I think that's a measure of our society as to whether or not you're valuable, which is a whole other conversation, right? That brings us pretty directly into the next section here, which is external pressures. Like, I don't want to pretend that all of the pressure to perform comes from ourselves. There are very real external pressures to perform that are at play. Let's talk about them, right? Like the ones that make us feel like we have to succeed. Those outside influences can really mess with your head and even your ability to survive in society. You know, there's obviously social media, but there's also familial expectations. Your parents might have certain ideas about what success looks like, and if you don't match up, it can feel like you've let them down. There's peer pressure. Your friends seem to be hitting all of these milestones, and if you're not keeping up, it can feel like you're being left behind. But even more seriously, we need to address school and work. Whether it's the pressure to excel academically or climb a corporate ladder, these environments can be breeding grounds for perfectionism. If we aren't performing, it can feel like we are not only going to not advance, but we may be at risk of financial loss. So how do you navigate feeling good enough when the standards are unrealistic while also being directly tied to your security? And then we do have internal struggles, right? We face self-doubt, constantly second-guessing every decision you make. Maybe you hold yourself back from pursuing your dreams or trying new things or speaking up for yourself out of fear of not being correct or enough or good or perfect. It can make you feel like you're not good enough, like you don't deserve success or happiness. And worst of all, it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy, leading you to sabotage your own efforts because you don't believe in yourself. But here's the thing, everyone experiences self-doubt at some point. It's a very normal experience. And the same thing, like imposter syndrome is a very normal experience. And negative self-talk, another close cousin to self-doubt, these things are human experiences, but they impact our ability to feel good enough. So where do we go from here, right? We're acknowledging we have internal pressures, external pressures. We, you know, it leads to self-doubt, it leads to self-sabotage, but what do we do with that? I know I'm not supposed to be constantly fixing and perfecting myself, but how do I relax? So I'm going to give you some tips. These are not things that I think ever get us to a destination of perfectly feeling balanced and good and appropriate and qualified. I think it's more something that we stay in consistent relationship to, that we check in on, that we pay attention to, that we question, and we, you know, we kind of focus on growth in that way. So let's talk about number one, which is to build self-trust. So if self-trust is an indicator of not feeling good enough, if it's a creator of the feeling of not being good enough, either way, there's a connection there. We need to build self-trust in order to even know what good enough is and to believe that we are good enough and that we have done good enough. So we need to build self-trust. One easy way to do this is to keep your promises that you make to yourself. You say you're going to do something at a certain time, that you do it. Another way to do this is to keep an eye on your qualifications and keep writing them down. This is something that I am terrible at, y'all. Like keeping track of like all that I've accomplished and really digesting that and understanding that. I have no sense. Like I've been in this job interview process and I sell myself so short because I forget everything I've done, all of my experiences that I've had that have like brought me to this place. It's like they don't even exist. Like they never even happened. And one thing that I'm working on right now is tracking that to really, when I remember something I'm in my job and I'm like, oh, I have experience in this, writing that down, you know, having a little note on my phone or a folder on your computer, if that works better for you, just email yourself, whatever works, and just go, oh, I did this at this time and I learned these skills. And then if you can compile those into one place, look at yourself and be like, oh, right. Look at all that I've done. Look at all that I've accomplished, you know? But let's get back to keeping your promises to yourself, because I think this is a major element of self-trust. And when I talk about relationship to yourself, I often will compare it to having a healthy relationship with anyone. What you're looking for is affection, honesty, trust, communication, time, quality time. These things are things you still need in relationship to yourself. So how do we build trust in a relationship? You see that this person does what they say they're going to do. They show up honestly. They have genuine conversations with you. They're honest about how they're feeling. They communicate. They do what, I'm going to say it again, they do what they say they're going to do. That's what we need to be doing for ourselves. And in order to do that, we have to do point two, which is to set realistic goals. It's really hard to do what you say you're going to do if you say you're going to do something that's impossible to manage. And I think that's where a lot of people fall. Like we get this whole like big, hairy, audacious goals, like BHAG mentality about things. And great, shoot for the stars, like no shame. But that should be a sliver of your actual goals, in my opinion. Your actual goals should be habits that you can build in real time, things that you can actually do to get closer to those BHAGs. Let's talk about like being in the Olympics, for example. Let's say you can't even do a cartwheel right now, and you're like, my BHAG is to be in the Olympics. okay, great. That's your BHAG. That's plenty of a BHAG. That's going to take up so much time and attention that you don't have room for another BHAG because that's a lot to take on. Now, your real goals, your habits, and your things related to that need to be much smaller, much more achievable. Make sure that those goals are achievable, manageable, and habits that you can actually maintain. So if your BHAG is to be in the Olympics, your actual goals and the things you're working toward need to be like, I'm going to go out and try to learn a cartwheel every day this week, or I'm going to take a gymnastics class. And that's it. But if you are holding yourself to the standard of I'm going to be in the Olympics without even knowing how to do a cartwheel, you're selling yourself short. You're making it impossible to do what you say you're going to do. You're making it impossible to trust yourself. And that's if that's something that you find that you are continuously doing, you're setting goals that are impossible to achieve and then holding yourself to that standard so that you feel like you can never do what you say you're going to do, explore the reason why. Go into that. Don't run away from that. Go into it. Look at it. Figure that out, because that is sabotaging your ability to trust yourself and to feel like you're ever doing enough, right? It's the entire model of that is designed to create a lack of self-trust in you. And it's worth exploring if the concept of a BHAG, the very concept of shoot for the stars and land, shoot for the moon and land among the stars, like that very concept, perhaps that's marketing to us. You know, like perhaps that's telling us that we're supposed to always be unsatisfied with where we are, what we're doing, how much we've achieved, how much we've accomplished. That is also worth questioning. That's just something someone said one time, right? Explore your own need, your own satisfaction. What do you actually want to feel like in your life? And maybe it doesn't look like the moon. You know, maybe it looks like Milwaukee. I don't know. But don't put this pressure on yourself because someone had a good quote once. And don't put that pressure on yourself because someone's trying to sell you a marketing program. Like, listen to who you are, what you want, and then set those goals in achievable, manageable ways. Which brings me to point three, which is do not set goals based off of metrics that you want to achieve. Base them on behavior. If you're looking to build self-trust and a sense of good enough, you cannot set your expectations for yourself based off of other people's behavior. I always use the example of I want to have 100,000 followers on Instagram. Well, that's not dependent on you. You actually don't get to choose that for yourself. That could depend on what's trending right now, what the algorithm is doing, what people are interested in, if people choose to follow or if they're just going to kind of consume your content. It's not something you can control. What you can control is your behavior. You can choose to post, you know, multiple times a day or even once a day. You can choose to create content that is original, organic, that is highly engaging. You can create content that is very shareable. You can collaborate with people. Those are goals that you can set for yourself because you can choose to do them or not do them. But you can't control what the results of that are. You can give yourself the best chance of a positive result, but you have to release the expectation that it will do what you want it to do. Maybe that whole process is intended to get you 100,000 followers, but it really just teaches you a little something about yourself. And that's also worthwhile. So set your goals based off of behavior, not metrics. Number four, define what it really means to be good enough in various aspects of your life. You know, what is it? And in different seasons of your life, right? What felt good enough for me in terms of keeping a clean home 3 months ago is a completely different standard than what it feels like now that I work like 8:30 to 5 every day. Like that is a very different standard. I go into an office. I can't like write an email, go clean the kitchen. I have to fit everything into that morning and evening window. That has changed things. So look at the season of your life. And you know, I'm a big fan of seasonal planning. Like check in, like what is spring looking like? right now? What is good enough as a spouse? What is good enough as a partner? What is good enough as a parent or a, you know, an employee? What's good enough for me right now in those aspects of your life? And be okay with living up to that standard instead of overachieving in every single area of your life, because that's a little unfair, you know? But what would achieving appropriately feel like right now? That's worth exploring. Number five is kind of related to that, like prioritize. I had a conversation with my therapist recently where I was talking about wanting to have like deep emotional connection with my partner, but then also feeling like there's just like so much else to do. And Obi and I, listen, we love a deep emotional moment. Like we could be in constant deep emotional conversation. And so we were kind of navigating like the balance of how do you navigate that if you could be in constant conversation with someone, but you also have like a lot of stuff to do. And she just very simply was like, well, what's your priority? And that's so nice. And obviously, like, constant communication isn't necessary, but it is a priority for me that we're in those conversations. That's a high priority. And if the dishes aren't done because we are bonding, like, who cares? You know, that is not my priority. Having a perfectly spotless home, having a thriving, emotional, deep, connected marriage, way cooler to me, you know? But it's sometimes hard for my brain to comprehend that, you know, or to accept that, because it feels like everything has to be functioning at such a high level all the time. Not that that's possible, but Lord, do I try, you know? And I know we all are. And it's really hard to accept the limitation of being a person sometimes, right? But if we prioritize, if we choose those priorities regularly, then we can own where we spend our time. Maybe right now a priority for me is like chilling, playing a little game on my phone, watching YouTube, and not putting a lot of pressure on myself to perform every weekend. Maybe a priority for me right now is like to make all of our bread from scratch. Maybe both of those are priorities and they can coexist. You just have to figure out what needs your attention when and why, and be okay with that. Own that choice. And then finally, you know, find that balance between growth and acceptance. And I know we know that, right? Like I want to be growing all the time, but I also want to accept who I am. How do I do that? I want to be healthy, but I want to love my body as it is, not put pressure on myself to like fix it or change it. I want to be, you know, I want to have a clean home, but I also don't want to over fix it on that. I want to grow emotionally, but I don't want to feel like there's always something about me that needs to be solved or fixed. How do we figure that out? How do we balance those things? And I have three measures that I like to use in order to make this decision. Number one, is this something that I'm doing to nourish myself or to do? Am I doing this because I'm trying to fix something I think is wrong with me? Is this something that I'm doing, you know, for long-term satisfaction and happiness and healing? Or am I doing this because I think that if I relax, there's a problem there? So that's number one. Number two is this causing harm to myself or others? If that's the case, that is a situation to solve, right? If it's causing harm to myself or to others, we need to work on this. It needs to become a priority now. And how can I do that in a nourishing, supportive way? Not a shaming, fixing, hurting kind of way. And then finally, can I enter into this growth with unconditional positive regard? Because shame inhibits growth. And we should talk about that, right? Like we love to feel like there is something really wrong with us and that we need to solve and that we need to fix and we need to constantly be working on it. If I let go, then I'm going to be a real problem. But actually that thought process makes it harder to grow. It makes it harder to take feedback. Because it's like you're getting hit from both sides. It makes it harder to be empathetic with other people because you can't hold the weight of being the whole problem. So then you need it to be someone else, right? You need them to be the problem. It makes it really hard to be in healthy relationship if you're holding shame. So how can you look at yourself with unconditional positive regard and see that, okay, yeah, I maybe made choices that were harmful or were harmful to myself or harmful to another person. How can I understand where that comes from with gentleness and curiosity while also looking for solutions that offer me love and nourishment in the process? That's the balance, in my opinion. It's not seeking to constantly fix yourself, but acknowledging where harm is done, owning that, and nourishing yourself out of repeating that behavior. And if you are familiar, the concept of unconditional positive regard is from Carl Rogers. And we're going to end today with a quote from Carl Rogers himself. The curious paradox is that when I accept myself just as I am, then I can change. All right, friends, thank you so much for being here. I hope this was a supportive conversation. As always, it's an absolute joy to create this content for you, and I will see you Thursday for the next one. Bye.